Ave Maris Stella, Dei Mater Alma.
Everybody, welcome to another edition of the Census Fidelium Hour. It's your host, Steve Cunningham, just coming at you with the... I wanted to talk about Easter, and I want to talk about like 15 different topics, but I did an interview this past Friday where I brought this exact topic up, and I actually read from it. So I was just going to play the interview because people, like I said, people like the discussion back and forth, and it's still me. And it's on the Catholic Versus website podcast channel on YouTube, Catholic VS. So Catholic Versus. He has a lot of cool interviews with all sorts of different people. So if you like apologetics and things like that, get into it. Go check it out. But let me play it because I'm going to start off with my rereading of Garinger last week for Easter week. And there were some fantastic nuggets in that. I don't know if you have seen it or heard it from the channel, or read it yourself, or go to the website and check it out. By the way, on the website, censusfidelium.com, I have it in video form, audio form, and reading form in multiple different languages. So check it out. Anyways, here is that interview. Go ahead.
There's any way I could explain that to others. What was going on? What would I was seeing? Because I don't think too many Catholics listen to alternative media like I do. Like mostly everyone probably thinks they're a bunch of kooks, so I'm listening to it. I'm seeing things. I'm going, I got to say something. I have that. It was that whole Spider-Man thing with great power comes great responsibility. I'm thinking, all right, I got a responsibility to at least say something. So started a new show. Long story with that one. Rebooted the new show. So we're still doing that basically once a week. Then started doing Clown Planet.
Yeah, yeah. I was watching that back during the pandemic or whatever. I was watching the bit of that.
Yeah, still going. I haven't done it in a couple of weeks because Holy Week was just long, and I'm trying to bust out the redoing the Garinger because YouTube did not like me reading from the screen. They think it was I was stealing content if I was reading from a website without my face on the – literally, that was what they said. If you're reading from a website without your face on it, they're thinking, yeah, it's like your AI bot. I'm going, trust me, you can tell that's not an AI bot. December through end of April, it's all was that. So that included Holy Week. So basically I started redoing that to have photos in the background, which to me, I think is a blessing in disguise because I'm finding more. I just redid this week. I didn't even read it this week. I'm listening to myself, which is hard, and reading along in it to make sure to see what's coming on next to figure out what photos I'm going to use next. And I got more out of it this week than I did last year when I read the darn thing into the thing and edited it. It's been just one of those things. Been redoing that through the news thing, Clown Planet. That takes about 2 hours, 2 or 3 hours. 3 hours just to edit, plus an hour of prep. I just bust it all out. I'm collecting news throughout the week, along with the family. We got another kid. We got three now since the last time we talked. Nice. And it's just bam, 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 and somehow I get to eat and work out in between and find some nap time at night.
So there's a connection with Enoch. You and Enoch, you know each other. What's the story there? He's a great guy. He was a great, great, great guest. Really lovely guy.
Yeah, for a while. I knew him back when he was in San Diego, and he started the Holy 40 Project, all about promoting virtue and things like that. And he messaged me one time talking about how much the channel has influenced him. And we started chatting. We've basically been talking ever since. He put me on with my first interview, I think it was him. It was a black and white on Instagram. And I thought that was cool. But we've been chatting it up for it's probably been about 5 years I've known him. And we have a couple mutual friends too. And then again, when I started to reboot, and I was thinking, all right, how do I want this thing to go? I don't want it to go the way it is. I want it to be bring the news to people. I'll be the one that comes out with the weird stuff. And I got Arrington that can do scripture and patristics just the top of his head. And I go, virtue, Boaz. He was an easy pick. I'm like, let me ask him if he could do it. And if you watch him on there, he'll be able to see, oh yeah, they're the virtue of whatever. And he'll bring that out. This is what's lacking here and what that is. So he's been the go-to, the virtue go-to guy. And then he started the rap thing. I'm going, all right, well, I didn't know I had an inner Tupac guy with me.
What about his friend Richard Barrett or something like that?
Barrett. Yes, I've known him for quite a few years as well. He's my church. I helped get him back into faith, but how that started is Mike was he was at Sirius XM radio. And he mentioned something about, was it gay marriage? And he said, he prefaced that we didn't know that my brother and I were listening at the same time. Because I'm Catholic, but this is probably about 9 years ago. And we both looked at each other going, dude, and we emailed him, said, dude, do not say you're Catholic, but either take out the Catholic part or take out the butt part. But don't do that. And he was very courteous. It was a terrible response. And he responded back, and we started emailing back and forth. And I decided just one day to download all the audio I had at the time, and burn them onto CDs and send it to him. And at that time, it was 12 CDs it took, and MP3s. That was probably 25, 30 to do the whole library. And that's MP3s. I could put 150 on each disc, at that time. And lo and behold, I gave him Peter Martyr poems, Miraculous Medals, and the CDs. And like that, overnight, he started talking about the rosary and the scapular, and the sermons just blew his mind. And eventually he got fired from Sirius XM because of it and started a new radio channel called the Crusade Channel. And one of his guys that he brought on was a guy named Rick Barrett to do a show. And everyone loves Rick. I talked to him a couple of times. He interviewed me on different things. And when I was just one of those things, like, I need a point guard. I'm not a point guard as a host. I can respond back, but I'm a color guy. I'm not the play-by-play guy. And I was thinking, who can I get? Rick's been doing this for years. Hey, man, you want to do that? You want to do something with us? And he was all in. Bam. And so that was an easy one set up. And him, we've been talking a lot more ever since, obviously. And then probably about once a week, once a month, I might shoot him a line or something. Or knew of him, but I didn't know him well. And then, then we got him on the thing. And again, the whole team just texts each other up and, you know, wishes each other, you know, good thoughts and, you know, good prayers for each other. And, you know, it's been a fun group. It's been really good. It's a good group of guys to hang out with.
Pretty cool. You know, it's Fawaz, right? Is that how you say his name? Mm-hmm. You know?
Fawaz.
Fawaz, he has a pretty cool tune called Unite the Clans, and he does a shout out to a whole bunch of people, yourself included. And I keep bugging him. He's got to make part two and include me, a CBS podcast, in there. And he said he'll do it. But, you know, the idea of Christian unity today with the right and the left and the middle and everything else like that and the online Catholic community, it seems like there's some bridges being built. I try not to get too involved in the online community because it can be toxic sometimes. But do you see that things are coming together? People are more open now to like bridging some of those differences that maybe were just perceived differences between, you know, what, you know, we would call a rad trad or moderate or a progressive. Do you see any bridges being built?
Yeah. I mean, it's weird because I know more, I would just quote unquote, just conservative ones, not really quote unquote trad. I have more friends in that circle than I do the trads online. I try almost to stay away from the trads online.
Okay.
Because you're right, we need to do the bridge thing. We need to, and Garanger writes about that. There's their fathers write about that. They all write about that. You got to lead with charity. It's not programs. It's not, hey, it's not going up to somebody. It's just like sales. You don't go up to somebody and says, hey, you suck, buy this. I mean, if you want to get somebody to come to the traditional mass, you show them the beauty. You show them this. You show them the love. You don't go, hey, what you go to right now, you're a moron. That doesn't win somebody over. And it's just a lot. It's that mindset. I had it at the beginning too, of this almost like an unchecked zeal, and which is your mind's in the right place, your heart's in the right place, but you're just doing it wrong in a sense. Again, it goes back to sales. If you were selling a product, you're excited about it. I can only sell stuff. Anybody, you can only sell things that you like, unless you just have no principle and you just care about money. And then you can sell, you do anything. I could never do that. I would always, my dad was like, they taught me that. if the product stunk and I told the doc that, hey, don't get this guy, get this, because he built my, I built his trust. He trusted me. He buy more. And it's the same thing for this on there. And I get guys like Kevin Nestor. He's a solid dude, good friend. And we chatted on DM a lot all the time. He's a former Protestant evangelical pastor. And I mean, he posts, you know, the New Right calendar all the time and talks about that. Great dude. He's one of those guys. Him and his wife come over tomorrow and we can hang out all day. Well, just great guy to hang out with. The other guys, sometimes I just want to grab him and slap him upside the head. And that's me. I'm kind of like that. But it's one of those, all right, what's our goal? Is it about, you know, getting a name for ourselves? Like just the other day, most of the trans were condemning the thing that happened in Florence on Easter. You know, what they light up this firework thing and it comes out and shoots dove, supposed to be the Holy Ghost, outside the church, and there's a altar outside that basically takes it and shoots it back in. It's cool as anything. And there's thousands of people outside, and it's been around for 1,000 years. But our guys were out there calling it Novus Ordo, modernist, and all this, going, man, you guys are just showing that it's all emotion. We don't know our history. And when we do that stuff like that, it makes us not only look dumb, but it hurts the movement. Instead of saying, man, that is really, really cool. I mean, just the guide part. You come out there and we're supposed to be excited for Easter. The resurrection, greatest thing in the world. And what for us Americans, Americans, the whole continent's American, but we somehow own that land that we're American. We just go to mass, we come back, and that's really about it. May have a cook-off, may something, may have a couple beers. Those guys know how to party. It's one of those things. I want to be like that. If we could incorporate that into what we're doing over here, man, I think we could just night and day difference. But yeah, the bridges, we got to reach out. I'm trying to do anything I can to work with others to draw the people in, because I'm thinking, I did an interview with...
We'll go complete this. We'll do more of this on the other side.
Hello, my name is Father Mark Lawler. I'm the pastor of the parish of St. Therese in Mooresville, North Carolina. I've been a priest of the Diocese of Charlotte for the last 27 years. When I was a seminarian almost 30 years ago, I began to write some of the stories of some of the experiences that I had as a seminarian and continued that as a priest. And in April of this year, I published a little book, a collection of these memoirs, basically my vocation story, some ministry stories, and a little family history or family experiences in there as well. So far, the response has been very positive, very humbling for me. The title of my book is Lessons and Stories from the Journey, Reflections from the Life of a Joyful Priest. If you're interested in obtaining a copy of this book, we have some copies here at St. Therese in Mooresville, but you can order it online as a paperback or as an ebook at Amazon.com. You can look under search Father Mark Lawler, L-A-W-L-O-R, or the title Lessons and Stories from the Journey, Reflections from the Life of a Joyful Priest. Thank you very much.
Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. John Acquaviva, host of Faith and Sport here on Carolina Catholic Radio. Our show addresses the aspects of sport, character, morality, and ethics often neglected in everyday sports conversations. For instance, we discuss the morality of transgender athletes, some diocese decision to disallow practice or games on Sundays, and the poor habit of injecting politics into the game. But first, I want to thank you for listening to our network of shows, and in particular, our show, Faith and Sport. The Carolina Catholic Media staff works very hard to bring you important and updated content directly related to our wonderful faith. And considering Carolina Catholic Media is fully funded by the listener, we need your financial help to keep bringing this programming to you. So please offer a monthly pledge or one-time donation to keep us moving in the right direction. And join me, Dr. John Acquaviva, as I discuss my two favorite topics, my faith and the world of sport, on the Faith and Sport Show here on Carolina Catholic Media Network. And we look forward to your donation.
Welcome back to Steve Cunningham with Sons Fedeli Mauer. Here we go with the part two of this segment right here. I'll go back to the interview we were doing.
To work with others to draw the people in, because I'm thinking, I did an interview with the Diocese of Charleston website and magazine, and I did the pitch 5 years ago, probably around last time we talked, and I got crickets back. And I think I had, I don't know, it was before I got the 100,000 subscribers. Now it's 250. And I was thinking, all right, I got the baseball card stats now. I'm back in the Carolinas. Let me write these guys and say, hey, by the way, one of the top YouTube channels in the world is from your area. They jumped all over that, called me up. The guy that interviewed me is from my home parish in Spartanburg. We had a great talk. He watches the diocese, had me on. I had me in the newspaper, and I'm going, they blocked me on Facebook years ago for talking about, you know, they had a nun on there. So they were celebrating her birthday. I go, that's a nun? And the question mark? And I was like, really? I didn't know, because you could check cleavage. And I was like, so they got mad at me about that. And I was like, this is never going to work. I was in their magazine last month. So I'm going, how many newbies just found out about that channel, went to the website, went to the YouTube channel, and I've seen the numbers. It's went up 200,000 views in the last month. So maybe that article did something, and I'll never know. But if more of the normies watch and listen and get hooked, we win in the long term. We might not be able to smack around and get somebody to do a TLM tomorrow. Long term, you can't kill ideas. And these people get on fire, and that's the whole purpose, getting one on, giving them on fire, as many people from wherever walk of life they can. And we convert people that. We convert neighborhoods. We convert cities, states. That's how we win. It's not the, you know, we're ostracizing those guys. It's not we're in this group, we're in this group. This Unite the Clans thing. I got my clan, and there's a lot of them. The Spiritus, you go to Spiritus TV, almost all those guys I know. The guys that don't want on, it's funny, because those are the guys that don't want on are the ones that keep saying Unite the Clans. Well, wait, where's this uniting the clan? You say Unite the Clan, but in reality, you want to be by yourselves. It's about you, in a sense. It's kind of like the Catholic business page I got on the website. I like the little guys. Rocky, the Eye of the Tiger. They got the fire. They want to do it. It's those guys that want to get out there and try to convert people, and they have that, the Eye of the Tiger, in a sense. The other guys, I don't know. As one friend of mine told me, I had heard a sermon on Veronica, and it blew me away from 2 years ago. As a priest out in England, Franciscan, talked about how the woman with blood issue is Veronica's. Eusebius in his book Against Heresies writes that was Veronica. And I never heard that before. Gave me chills. I sent that to a buddy of mine. He goes, I read Eusebius backwards and forwards. I had forgotten about that. I knew that. And he goes, thanks for this one website for telling me all the sins about Francis. But no one ever, how many people knows about that Veronica? It was the woman with the,
that's pretty well established then.
I'm sorry?
That's well established. That's pretty solid. We can go with that. Take that to the bank. That the woman with the hemorrhages was Veronica.
Yeah. And it's funny. Mostly it's the Protestants that have the websites on that. it's a Eusebius's book. And in fact, then I tried finding the statue because apparently back wherever she lived, the history of it is they would build a statue to whoever did them a good deed. So there was supposed to be a statue of Christ that she built back then. And that was the whole thing about going with the veil, wiping the blood. It's just the connection of there. You got Photius, St. Photius. Her whole family became martyrs. She's the Samaritan woman at the well.
That's cool.
The entire family's in the Roman martyrology for, I think it's March 23rd, 26th, I think it is. Yeah, look it up. The whole family's in there. Things like that. Mm. You know, I want to hear more of. Tell me what, you know, someone's going after the mass, someone's telling me the Pope's doing this. I don't care. Give me the good stuff. Like Gomeriz this week, he's comparing, you always heard, you know, the past. Why do they call it the past? Well, Garnier brings up, he goes, the first Passover, the Passover through the Red Sea, and the Passover in the New Testament, that all happened the same day. It is connected, all that. And you're going, holy cow. It's things like that should just set our hearts on fire and all this. Really, you want to change somebody? You read stuff like that or get those knowledge and then go out and someone sees you like during the lockdowns, which happened. Why are you so happy? And then you can tell them.
Amazing. You mentioned the Roman martyrology. You know, I haven't looked into it, but the people that I talk to about young earth creationism, they point to that as a historical church document that emphasizes the date of creation. And I don't know how reliable it is, but it puts us at about 7,222 years old. So I like to use that as sort of my ballpark guess of about how old the universe is. Do you think there's any weight to the to that number or to the that document for Christmas? I think it's a Christmas thing, right?
Yeah, the Christmas chant. Yeah, the Midnight Mass chant. It's a beautiful chant. I don't know where they. I don't know how they came up with the numbers. But I would go with. I mean, if you have someone that has that versus the 4,000 years one, we're all guessing on those ones.
Okay.
That's at least an idea that you can work with versus 4,000 to 7,000 to 4 to 7 million.
Right. Right. You know? We're in the same ballpark. Like.
Yeah. Yeah, I can live. We can work with that a little bit. I mean, yeah, because you got Advent, 1,000 years for each week of Advent. But Garnier gets into that a little bit. But yeah, I mean, if that comes up to about 7,000 before Christ, I was like, yeah, I can work with that. Other than the billions.
Well, I'm talking about like from today, it would be 7,222.
Yeah. Then that puts it right about 4,000 BC. Yeah.
So that works in with the other common thing, because I'm sure they've done the Old Testament chronologies of the patriarchs to figure out. They're different. They're different manuscripts that would give different calculations, I guess, but they're all roughly within that ballpark, right?
Yeah. My apologies. I wasn't thinking when you said that I was going with zero instead of 7,000. I'm going, okay, well, seven. I didn't think about.
Yeah.
I didn't add it up, but no. If you go from now to 7,000, yeah, that pretty much
that puts fits it right in.
Grand.
And is there any reason why? Should we give that tradition weight because it was the Roman martyrology? Was it used in the church for hundreds of years, or do you know the history of that document? Of that?
Yeah, those. I mean, the monks would sing it. They sing it at during dinners. That's been around for quite some time. I don't know when it was put together or when it was the first publication, if you say, but I'm sure those guys just then throw a dart and go, you know what? Let's go with this. And, yeah, this sounds cool. These guys did the research. Plus, when you look back at you read all these saints and they talk about how their memory was just fantastic. Like Bellarmine knew the Bible backwards and forwards. He wasn't alone. I mean, a ton of people knew everything, the writings, the saints, the fathers, the Bible, all of that. So these guys knew that. We're like, we have to go to a book and look it up going, all right, what's the argument for that? Who defended it? Didn't defend? What was their arguments? These guys had that. So I would assume that whoever put that together was the same. It came from the same cloth, and they're like, we know what these guys said, which we have books on that, but they might have had it to memory.
Yeah, it's organic knowledge. But isn't it also very powerful that the Jews, even though they missed the boat on the Messiah, obviously, but they also date the universe at under 6,000 because they think that it's going to end at 6,000, but it's still closer than the evolutionists. And the Orthodox, from what I understand, a lot of the Orthodox, not all of them, but a lot of them have a young Earth calendar too, like they think the universe is young. Do you know anything about the Eastern Orthodox in terms of evolution versus creation? Do you have any finger on the pulse there?
That would be a good one for Eric Ibarra, but I don't even know I don't even think that's a thing with them. I think that's mostly, it seems like, because I know some Byzantine guys. I don't know many, don't really know any East, the Schismatic guys. I mean, but they use the same calendar per se, but their Easter is this week. The Byzantine guys are united, their Easter is with us. But I've never heard them talk about evolution. I would say that if one of our boys went up to them and said something about evolution, they might get punched in the face, because I'm thinking that the devotion, the big devotion to Theotokos and everything like that, they are not going to come with. It's kind of like was that book by I forget the name of the book. Everyone, Jesus, it's a good catechism. But in it, when it gets into evolution, it goes, it's hard on pious ears to say. And you know, when you hear that, it's going to be like, you know, I like you, but.
Yeah. Well, it's like the question I always ask to my Catholic guests who aren't sure about evolution is, and I actually used it on an Orthodox guy. I recently interviewed Robert Spencer. He's Orthodox. Do you know him?
Yeah.
He's a big, he doesn't like Islam too much. But he wasn't sure about evolution or creationism, and I just asked him one very simple question. Do you believe that the Blessed Virgin Mary is an ape? Yes or no? That'll decide which side of the fence you're on, which side of the issue you're on, right? And he just laughed. He just laughed because
rejection of the Immaculate Conception.
It's pretty much a slam dunk. You have a friend in the chat called Katie Plus. Katie, do you know her? She says hi to Steve.
Hey, Katie, how you doing?
Good maybe to see you. Maybe you know her personally, or maybe just online.
I don't remember people's handles.
Yeah. So, you know, my wife is Greek Orthodox, culturally Greek Orthodox, and she hates the Catholic Church. But her pet peeve is when people convert. She said, you should just have the religion of your parents, and that's it. And my thing is that, like, I'm of Irish descent. My ancestors were Catholic, you know. And if we want to go back further, like, I mean, everyone's got a twisted, winding path of how they got to their worldview. But if you go back far enough, you're going to get to Catholicism always, because if you go back far enough, you'll end up in the Garden of Eden, and they're not Scientologists in the Garden of Eden, right?
No. That's the whole thing about racism. Someone goes, you're a racist. I go, well, we all come from Adam and Eve, so it's, in a sense, it's just stupid just to be that way. We're all, especially the image of like this guy, you say the St. Patrick breastplate. I mean, come on, it's... But that goes back into me. That's what got Frederick. You ever heard the Frederick Douglass story?
No.
You brought it because of me saying that in the Irish thing. Frederick Douglass got the idea of being free from two Irishmen, Catholics, in Baltimore. He was on the dock, and these two Irishmen that was talking to him, and they found out he was a slave, and they couldn't think of anything like that. It's like, what are you talking about? They brought him out, they brought him back to Ireland. And
we'll finish this on the flip side.
On January 31st, 2019, Carolina Catholic Media signed on Charlotte's first Catholic radio station, AM 1270 WCGC. By the grace of God, we celebrate the past 4 years and look forward to continuing our apostolic vision and mission to serve the Carolina Catholic community. We are evangelistic partners with our clergy, active parishioners, the fallen away, and the homebound. We are accessible to all Christians, agnostics, and atheists. With distribution of a wide array of content across 7 media platforms, there truly is something for everyone. During these past 4 years, Carolina Catholic has expanded to 7 media platforms that include radio, internet stream, mobile app, website, YouTube, social media, and e-newsletter. Nearly all local programs are available by podcast and video on demand. In the year ahead, we're committed to promote more local parish, school, and ministry events, more live broadcasts, and more valuable content that showcases our dynamic local Carolina Catholic community. Of all the Catholic radio stations in the U.S., Carolina Catholic is arguably a leader in locally produced programs. To continue our work, Carolina Catholic Media needs $15,000 in monthly funding to continue operations across our 7 media platforms. We are 100% dependent on your generosity. If you love what we're doing, please join us with a monthly tithe or annual gift. We have partnership plans available for parishes, schools, and ministries. If you own a business, you can be a program sponsor on one or all of our platforms. You can do a live broadcast of a special event, with promotion before and rebroadcast after. On behalf of everyone at Carolina Catholic Media, we thank you for your past support and look forward to you joining us with the resources the apostolate needs to continue to evangelize the truth of Jesus Christ and our Catholic faith across the Carolinas. May God bless you and your family abundantly.
Welcome everybody back to the Sense of Fidelium Hour. Let's get right back to the interview we were talking about. I was doing the Frederick Douglass bit.
And he's walking around. He writes this in his autobiography, talking about, I go into a church. They don't tell me, get out, blank. I go here. They don't yell at me. I go here. They don't do this. And he just gives a litany of places to go through. He goes, one thing in common with all these people are they're Catholic. Wow, that's a great, you're not going to hear that in school, though.
You'll hear the opposite. But, you know, I was very hung up the past couple of years about the whole colonization of the indigenous peoples of America and all this sort of thing. I just got sort of annoyed by it, like the mistreatment of the Aboriginal peoples here in Canada. Like a lot of them today don't have clean drinking water, which I find is a real travesty. but it's not newsworthy. It's not newsworthy, you know. No one really seems to care. So my friend who works for the Quilby Center, he told me about a book that talks about some of the Jesuit missionaries that came, I guess the second wave or whatever, that came in the mid-1800s. And it's really wonderful. I hope it's true, because it really paints a nice picture of the church and the church's relationship with the native peoples in the U.S. of A. And, you know, it's focused mainly in Missouri, and then it moves to the Rockies. I don't know how far Missouri is from the Rockies. But my point is that the book portrays these people. It's the biography, by the way, of Father DeSmet or DeSmet?
DeSmet, yeah. Yeah, you know, him on the wall right there.
So you know the story?
Oh, yeah. I've seen his cassock. There's a museum of him in St. Louis.
Really?
I'm a big fan of him, yeah.
Okay. Well, I hope it's all true. I mean, hopefully you can fill in the gaps for me, but it really paints a good picture of the relationship between the church and the Aboriginals. And these people were really thirsty for the truth, a lot of them, especially, I guess, I'm just reading now the part about the Flatheads. And yes. They were really thirsty for the truth, and they were wanting priests, and they had a hard time getting one, and they waited for 8 years. And finally, I think someone was sent from Montreal, if I'm not mistaken. That's where I am. And so it's really touching. And can we have a reasonable amount of hope that this isn't just propaganda, Catholic propaganda? Is it true?
Oh, yeah, you got, I got people that gone to the shrine and taken photos of that. I mean, his first mass was in Western Wyoming, almost went to it. They still got a stone
monument
marker for that, for DeSmet. Yeah, DeSmet went from St. Louis to Montana and back multiple times on horseback, which is an incredible journey. It's hard in a car. Could you imagine that on a horse? And then not on top of riding back and forth on the Great Pond, going to France and back. Yeah, the Schmidt stories, man, I love that. That dude, wasn't the Mohawks, which it was the Hurons, I think it was, that saw him. And these are the ones that people are going, these guys would kill you. You read this, you go to school, and they're going, stay away from these guys. Basically, that's what you get from going to stay run indoctrination camps. They see him, put him on their shoulders, process him around, call him the Great Father. Lips Who Cease Not to Pray was the name for him. Kind of like Dancing with Wolves. His lips cease not to pray. One time he was trying to find a lost daughter, and he told him, oh, we're going to say a couple masses, and this is what's going to happen. And they didn't believe it. And she ended up coming back, and they loved him for that. Needed rain. He asked for some rain. After a couple masses, it rained. It's obviously just like the North American Mars. You had the fight with the little skull, little weirdo guys, the medicine men. But man, these tribes loved that guy. I mean, it was one of those, like, you can picture it. You read that book, it's like a movie. You picture him riding up, and the guy's with him, like, you know, hey, Father, you watch out. And he goes, don't worry. And he sits there and smokes it up with these guys for all night long. They have a party. Like the Indians, they wrote a letter to one tribe wrote a letter to Pius the Ninth, and he responded back, and they partied for a week before they read it. They were just happy that they got a letter. And there's photos of him with, let's see, was it about 9 or 10, maybe 10 or 11 tribes. It's still on YouTube, Google. You can look up the photo. It's him and about 9 chiefs. They go to D.C. And I can't remember what they went to D.C. for, but come to find out, is U.S. Grant wanted to kick the Catholics out and shove in the Protestants, because they knew if they got that, they would dismantle the tribes. And you can thank the good old U.S. of A. for destroying the tribes, because all those guys were Catholic, and they knew better. From the Black Robe, there's stories of when the missionaries, the Methodists and things like that, would hear about them, and they would come out and with their wives, and the Indians would go, not you. Where's your robe? Two, they don't have wives.
And the crucifix. And the crucifix, too. They wanted the crucifix.
Yeah. They were telling them to get scrambled, you know, get out of here. Yeah, you read those stories. It's just edification on that, because then you hear about the morals of them, that they would have like a city, like a city market, and whatever people would, you know, would take, they would leave their currency on the table, and it would be nobody was at the
table. Honor system.
Nobody stole. Nobody did this. And at the end of that chapter, it's in that book. It mentions, he goes, these are the savages. Where people they like other people from the Eastern states when it saw this goes over. These are the savages we're supposed to fear. They were more as they said, they were more civilized than we were. And it's because the Catholic missionaries were out there and they were trying to convert them, and they were. And it's from the North American martyrs, St. Isaac Joseph, sacrificed from those guys, St. Katira, all of them, especially with the flatheads. Wow, that, I mean, that story is just cool, too.
Well, don't tell me too much because I'm just getting to the part with the flatheads now. But, you know, the word savage is not a negative word. It just means those who live in the woods. That's all it means. But it has a connotation, just like the N-word. Like, I don't mind using the N-word because it's just like, I'm not white and these people are not black. It's obvious, like, I'm pink or yellow or whatever. And they're not black, but it's just the N-word just means black, and it's just, it's not a big deal. But they're all the negative connotations where we want to insert hatred in there, and it's the same thing.
Change the meanings. Because I think the original word means dumb, basically like dumb or not knowledgeable, something like that.
It's, which word?
It was like stupid or something like this. But I mean, what's the Seminole? You know the Seminole, right?
From the seed.
Well, no, Seminole. Yeah, well, that. I mean, but Seminoles and Florida State Seminoles.
No, I don't know.
The Florida State University is nicknamed the Seminoles. How they got their name was from the fort at St. Augustine. It was all Catholic, and there was all Indians there. And there was a general, I can't remember his name. He's from South Carolina. And because I'm doing the history of the states, and eventually I'm going to get started on Florida and go up the East Coast. And I already got the Southwest taken care of. And this general from South Carolina hated Catholics, went down to the mission, killed all the priests, and the Indians were wandering around, Seminole wandering around. They didn't have a father. They were just off to themselves. Some got slaughtered. Some lost their lives. You know, just depend. But that was it. They go after the priests, and they'll scatter the flock. And it just shows, yeah, whatever you were taught in school about the relationship between the white man and the Indian – no, there was nothing but love. And you hear that from New Mexico. I mean, sure, there was martyrs at first. You get there's a book of all the martyrs before, was it 1570, I think it's the name of the book. And you hear about the guys getting tomahawked right off the boat in Florida. I mean, the blood was already being spilled on the land. But yeah, just you keep pounding away, and eventually you soften their hearts and they come in. And how did they do that? I mean, did they tweet it? Did they call them names? It's amazing how we used to do that. And we were able to convert people that would eat people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, you know, they were really pushed west. I guess you know the story much better than I do. I'm just learning about it now. But they were really pushed west, and their livelihood was taken away. And, you know, they were mixed with other tribes that hated them and these sorts of things. And they were starving, eating their own young and stuff like that, allegedly.
And then when they found out that they didn't like whiskey, or they were going to be screwed up by whiskey, the Protestant government sent them whiskey.
Exactly. Yeah, and the Catholics were trying to tell the government, hey, this is happening, can you stop it? And it's just hands-off policy there. So it really is dark, you know, it really is dark. But, you know, I'm very happy. I'm happy to be on the good guys team, you know. And I feel a little bit bad for the way that the Protestants are portrayed in this book. But if it's true, I mean, it's just like, I mean, we know that the fullness of the faith is the Catholic faith. And we know that with error comes propensity for lies and for satanic stuff. So even if you're a part of another Christian community, it's dangerous. Like, that's why God wants us in the safety of the ark. That's why he wants us in the Catholic Church, because, you know, we can love our Christian brothers and sisters who aren't Catholic, but they are in danger. And that what that danger means is that they are prey to the snares and the pumps and the traps of Satan, right?
So. Yeah, the violence isn't like it used to be. I mean, there's a book that Father, he's a priest in Australia. He wrote on the Reformation back, or the Revolution in Ireland, what they did in Ireland, Scotland, Wales, just Wales in general, and then in some parts of Europe, the Calvinists especially. And it is, I mean, NC-17 rated to horror what they did. I mean, and that goes back into the States. I mean, this is during a time when the Puritans came over and said, banning Christmas because there's two papists. The cathedral was in Philadelphia. If you look at it, the windows were up top and not at the ground level because the rocks were getting thrown into churches. So they made it so that they couldn't, they're high enough so you could throw rocks in to destroy the cathedrals, because so churches. John Hughes, Remember when they talked about it, he comes into the city, the governor or the mayor, and says, if one Catholic church burns down, I will make this a new, I can't remember the name of the city, but he was going to say, I'm going to take all the Catholics and burn this city down if this doesn't stop. There was a lot of anti-Catholic, there's a book called Anti-Catholicism in the Colonies of America. I got the book in the other room, and it is gruesome what they did to us. I mean, it's not like that anymore. But let me go with that and what happened in the South Carolina, Florida thing. Georgia, the state of Georgia, was created to be a buffer state to keep the Catholics from going up the coast. So that's why they went along the Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, and the Texas. There was a buffer. They put a buffer state to keep them from coming up. The Klan, where do you think they got their garb? That's from the penitents out in during Semana Santa week when they come out with their garb and babies get dressed for it, kids get dressed for it. And it's supposed to be, we're all made in the image of light. We're all the same. We're all united. There's no one that's special. That's the whole covering. They hide their personality, hide their skin, basically, because we're all made in the image of likeness of God and we're all equal. And the Klan took it and spun that around. What do you think they kept that idea? It wasn't just like, hey, you know, what do we think about this costume? No, they hated the Spaniards, Florida. they were taking their stuff, what they were used to, and use it against them for fear. And it just takes a special person to do stuff like that.
All right, well, I'll finish up this segment. This is a 2-hour, I went on for 2.5 hours with him, so... another 12-minute segment, the final segment for today on the other side of this break.
Teachers that care, professors that care about you. Just an awesome experience all around.
There's peace here. There's encouragement here.
Faculty, everybody that works here, they really set you up for success.
I don't think I have ever felt as loved and as supported and as encouraged as I have at the Abbey.
There's something here that's underlying and intrinsic. It's like a spirit of love and community. And I think the spirit is God's presence here.
Belmont Abbey College, a world away. But close to home. Visit us at BelmontAbbeyCollege.edu.
Faith and charity are key elements of life, but are they at the center of your retirement planning and life insurance decisions? Knights of Columbus, a trusted organization with a proud history of more than 140 years of helping its members, can help Catholic families with insurance and retirement planning solutions. Most importantly, we do this in a way that is compatible with Catholic teaching and the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops Investment Guidelines. Today, we have expanded our offerings to include retirement annuities, long-term care insurance, and disability income insurance. Beyond the benefits of financial protection, members may take satisfaction in knowing that Knights of Columbus contributes to causes that align with Catholic moral teaching. Let your faith inspire your financial decisions. Terms and conditions apply. Learn more by calling Field Agent Bob Gordon at 516-551-7838.
Hey everybody, Bill Snyder here. I'm one of the co-hosts of The Remnant. It's a men's show on the Carolina Catholic Radio Network with my two friends, Ray Haywood and Stephen Thomas. We talk about some of the issues facing men today and how to fight back against a culture that hates authentic masculinity. You can listen to it on the Carolina Catholic Radio Network every single Saturday at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Check it out.
Welcome, everybody. This is Steve Cunningham with Sense of Vidalium Hour. Here's that last segment for today on that interview that I gave this past Friday. And anyways, here we go. Sorry.
It was a creation back in, the first century, second century. And it's... Hey, the Muslims are kinder to us on Mary and our Lord than they are.
I
think of I got Alphonse Ratzburn over there, and another story about he was a Jewish businessman in Rome, and a guy that just gave him a miraculous medal, asked him to say the Memorare, and all of a sudden he converts and he started an order based on the his order was on the conversion of the Jews. But just like everyone, everyone else, we should be able to wanting to convert everybody. And how do you do it? Everyone's got a different idea. Everyone's got a different plan to do it. It's all about your personality, what ideas you want to do. You can invite them in your home, invite them, give them medals, pray for them. Obviously, we pray for them. That's everyone. But it's just all different ideas. The anti-Semitism stuff, I don't even listen to Nick because I don't have time. I have no idea which I don't think I've ever heard. I know of him, but I've never heard his. I don't even know his voice. But there's no hate. It's you hate the evil. You hate evil. You love the person. You hate the heir. So he'll probably agree to that. He loves the Jewish man, but he hates the Jewish heir. It's just one of those we pray for their souls. And it's one of the prayers on Good Friday that was taken out of the from the liturgical reforms of pre-55. And the 62, and after the 62, they took that out. And obviously the new mass, they got that taken out too. We used to pray for those guys at mass, and now we don't. It's the false ecumenism idea of, we're all good. We're just meeting where they are. And all. Well, what are we doing? I don't know. Like, it goes back to Fulton Sheen and Billy Graham. I have no idea what Fulton Sheen did to Graham, if he tried to bring him in. I'm pretty sure he probably did. Because he was a good friend of his, and you kind of like scratch your head, like, how come he didn't get him in? Uh-huh. You got all these other guys. What happened with Graham? But he goes into Graham, could have been human respect. He was getting he was wealthy. He's in Charlotte. He's got a huge library, Sola Scriptura, the Billy Graham Library. It's a real thing. It's ginormous. Wait a minute, Sola Scriptura? You got a library. Come on, be consistent here. We do what we can, and then we leave it in, as Colby said, leave it in the Immaculate's hand after that.
So it's a very slow process trying to figure out what to do with Bishop Fulton Sheen and his body and all that. Is that resolved now?
No, I don't think it is. What's his face? I can hook you up with him. He works for the Fulton Sheen website. Great dude. He knows all that backwards and forwards.
Like, hook me up for sure. Yeah. Send me all the interesting guests you can for sure. But, there was some controversy. I heard a few things. I don't want to badmouth him because I love him so much. But I heard a few things like maybe he was there's some indications like Devil's Advocate was digging up stuff like that. He may have exaggerated some of his credentials or, bragged or boasted or something too much about his accomplishments or something like that. Again, this is not to bash him or to speak ill of the dead, because I think he's a wonderful, wonderful Catholic. And I think he's a saint. But, we're all human. And I guess it's more the Holy Spirit that's going to decide who to canonize and who not to. I believe it's an infallible decision that comes down. I've met some Catholics who are on the conservative side who don't want to admit that St. John Paul II or Paul VI were saints. And so they just reject the idea that it's an infallible pronouncement of the Church. What do you think?
Bellarmine, Alphonsus, Francis de Sales, quite a few doctors of the Church, the Hall of Famers, they say it's an infallible thing. It's borderline heresy to believe on the other way.
Okay.
And I had another friend tell me, he goes, all right, let's pretend that it did. If he's in heaven, and first off, wouldn't the devil be laughing that someone in hell is on our altar? One, just common sense. Two, if he's in heaven, what do you think he's doing? He's praying, man, I really hope it doesn't change down there. He's probably praying for everything that, man, I screwed that up. And they always say, I think with the last three, they said it wasn't about the papacy, especially JP2. They said it was about his personal life. And what they praying for? They're probably praying for the restoration of Christendom. They're probably praying to help us out. They're not praying, man, I hope this continues. Let's get the popcorn up here ready on this. Watch what happens here. They're hoping. They're on our side. It's, not saying, all right, you have to go up there and pray to Pope Paul VI and say that, you're the biggest devotee of ever. But maybe send them and shoot them a line, or say thank you or whatever. Please pray for this. Help us out of this mess. And maybe he'll be for that. It's better than the alternative of just I'm going to tweet how bad this is. I'll do it. It's we got the weapons. For those guys that you talk about the Sedevacantist contest, hold on to every word the Pope says, tweets, breathes, whatever. Mm-hmm. Man, if we would have done that to all the other popes in history of the world, history of the church, how many would they have kicked out? And first off, how much time do you have to listen? Just don't listen. Just, you know, back when they, before internet, you had no idea who the Pope was. You might think it was by the time you figured out it was, he was dead. And then you got a new one. You're not, you don't know what he ate in the rotunda. You don't know what he ate for lunch, much less, hey, who's he talking to this week? I don't know. I'm trying not to get, you know, starve. I don't have my courier coming across the Atlantic in 5 months to get through the weeds and find me in a remote section of the United States to hand me a letter and for me to, you know, I like this Pope.
Well, you know, I often think about my favorite saints, and it's just a fact. It's just a fact of human nature that my chemistry with my favorite saints is going to be hit and miss. It's going to be, I would need to meet them when they're walking the earth, when they had their frailties, they had their own, you know, weaknesses, and they had their own personality defects or whatever. I would need to meet them, spend time with them to know if I actually had good chemistry with them. It's not guaranteed. It's not guaranteed. Right? It's not guaranteed. Some of the saints didn't even get along with each other.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
People are,
yeah,
people.
Jerome and Augustine were the head to head. They were like, yeah. This.
Yeah. This side of heaven, it's not like we can romanticize even the saints, because we don't know. We don't know what the chemistry would be. Now, in heaven, of course, we're going to have good chemistry with everyone, right?
Yeah.
So that's a different, right. That's a different thing.
Yeah, and it's just relaxed. This anxiety is a double playing with our emotions. It gets us the double plays and troubled waters. And so you just get out of it. You learn to love more, charity, caritas, love and pray more. You're praying always. You're reading less blogs if you're praying always. Think about like the Desert Fathers. Garanger writes about that, about Easter. Because they mandated, you know, there was one time they'd leave their cells with Sundays. They mandated that they come over to celebrate Mass. And he said on one Easter, there was 50,000 desert monks coming to one church. I think there's two out there right now. So it's just, you know, where's our target? You're running hard, as Augustine's line, you're running hard, but on the wrong road. Is that the fight you want to do, or is it? What's your motive? You want to try to convert people, or you want to show? Because if people are online looking at things and you type in Pope and they see all this hate going on, mm-hmm. over what? How many people are going to say, you know what? I like this guy. I'm going to keep following. I'm going to look at it. You know, it goes back to sales. How do you sell somebody? Mm-hmm. How do you sell that? You don't, you know, there's people coming in. We can have more if we were. And I got this idea of all the traditional church parishes should have convert their neighborhoods. Their neighborhoods around them, they all should be coming in there. Yeah. And if they're not, what are we doing? Yeah. There was a diocese parish down in Blythewood. He's now in the coast of South Carolina. He offered me a job for $30,000 or do something with the youth ministry. I gave it back to him. I told him, so you said to give it to build an actual church here. But he had a plan. He was putting ads in the newspaper, free ads in the free newspaper about apologetics. What is the papacy? What is the Eucharist? He showed me a board, and he drew out the land around the church, and everyone that goes to that parish had points up, and he dictated, you are in charge of this section, I wrote this section, and he handed them stuff like fish fries. Every week they had something. Put this on their door, bring them in. And he was successful bringing them in. Now, the problem was one of those starting lineup masses. Welcome, everybody, to Transfiguration Catholic Church. Here's your starting lineup. It's the same priest we have for the last 5 years. You know his name, Father. And then, you know, at altar girl, she has curls. It's Susie. You know, something like that. It's just so cringe. And, you know, they got the band up front. And before the seventh inning stretch, they get up and say, look at your neighbor and shake their hands and say hi. You know, I remember there was a lady there that had a veil on, and I almost went to her and go, how'd you get in here? The guy next to you is sitting there with his cross leg in a golf shirt. Well, hey, we got to get this going. We got a tea time coming up in 45 minutes. The guy had a great plan.
Yeah.
But it was an awful product he had. I mean, what's the difference between that and the Baptist Church and the J-Dubs down the street and this? If he had a reverent mass, even had a reverent Novus Ordo mass, he would have converted that entire city.
Wow.
But it was just, I mean, wow. I can't do this. There's no way. I mean, he asked me to come down. I remember him asked me to come down. And he was like, "Oh, we'll have mass, and then we'll go get something to eat." I said, "Okay, sure, fine." And it was nobody in the parish except me. And he's giving a sermon, looking at. I'm over here.
Oh God!
I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And he asked me to read back then. I remember asked me to read the only time I ever did that. And I'm reading, and you're facing chairs. And I was like, "This, are you serious with this?" And even then, I had no idea about the traditional mass, but I'm going, this doesn't make any sense.
Oh, man. I wish that the parishes, just the local parishes, would just try to make a little bit of outreach. I really do. And not even with an explicit
view. Talk about, I remember, was it Jocko that brought that up? Or someone else talking about when they were talking about all the police problems. If they would get out of the cars and start walking the beat, you talk about the problems that would go down because everybody would.
I was bringing up a local parish that did this, and they closed down the city so they could do a procession, a St. John the Baptist. Closed down the city. The whole town of Tryon was, they had tailgate chairs. This is about 12, 15 years ago. They had tailgate chairs up along the lines. It was glorious. A couple hundred people in the procession, singing, throwing their handkerchiefs up, singing Aves, singing all kind of Marian hymns. And there's a gigantic statue of St. John the Baptist being rolled down Main Street in Tryon. It was fantastic. Anyways, God love you. Have a great rest of the week, and we'll talk to you next time.